Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Unicorn Company. This is your host, Carrie. First of all, I wanted to go ahead and go over some of the news. Well, the only news I really have here, Iron Wind Metals had a price increase for their miniatures. So I know that some of you are already out there groaning about this. This new segment is going to mainly focus here as there are some things that need to be understood about Iron Wind Metals. The first thing is that they're a small company. They may serve our entire game and now in a way are competing with Catalyst, but they have made miniatures for Battletech since the shutdown of Ralpartha. And some of the molds they use still date from that period. Are they old? Yes. There isn't any mistake about that. They are rolling out the new sculpts that have been released in plastic, though. This isn't the reason for the increase. And frankly, I think that if someone does want or need to buy a metal miniature, they need to take this into account. The price of metal miniatures has not kept pace with the price of raw materials. If you look at the price of metals in the past 20 years, it has been going up at a rapid rate. In fact, if metal minis were priced to keep pace with it, we would be paying way more than we do now. This is one of the key reasons that plastics have gained so much of a foothold in the industry. Do I think Iron Wind eventually needs to change or switch over to a different material? Yeah. Resin casting should be something that is explored. Of course, this also leads to the question of 3D printing, the specter that hangs over small miniature production companies. Production time's slower, but production costs are a fraction of what it costs to produce in metal, or even to resin cast. So those are just thoughts. As the last part of the news, I will be attending RavenCon in Richmond. I will have a Clan Novacat army of 350 points with me while I'm there. I don't plan on playing anything in the style of the 350-200 that Wolfnet uses, but if anyone would like to throw down on a 350 versus 350 game, or just hang out and talk about the game, look for the girl who will be wearing, well, I'll figure out what before the end of the episode. But let's get into the main subject. As mentioned last episode, we'll be looking at the Clan Invasion era, the era that the War of 3039 set us up for, and that introduced us to the first of many divisive things in the Battletech universe. Unlike the Succession Wars, which we only really got a small taste of with the Fourth Succession War and the War of 3039, the player base as a whole got to experience the Clan Invasion era from start to finish. While official sources state the Clan Invasion era covers the years of 3050 to 3062, it could be argued that the era should begin in 3049 when we first see the clans on the Rock as Vlad Wolf defeats Phelan Kell and he is taken as a bondsman. After this, the rest of the Inner Sphere begins to encounter the clans as they would conquer world after world like a steamroller through the Lyran side of the Federated Commonwealth, the Free Roslog Republic, and the Draconis Combine. The invasion will be brought to a sudden halt when Tyra Miraborg would fly her Shallone aerospace fighter into the Bridge of the Direwolf over the world of Radstadt. This incident nearly killed Clan Wolf Khan Ulrich Kerensky and did result in the death of the clan's Ilkhan, Leo Showers. Her actions not only brought the clan juggernaut to a grinding halt, but also earned her a line in the Remembrance, the epic poem-style chronicle of the history of the clans. The sacrifice that she made led to what the Inner Sphere would know as the Year of Peace. With the clans going home to choose a new Ilkhan, Wolf's Dragoons would call for a conference on outreach concerning the mysterious invaders. This little meeting would end up shaping much of the Inner Sphere for years to come. At the conference, a friendship formed between Hoshiro Kurita and Victor Steiner Davian. A romance began to develop between Victor and Ami Karina as well, and we got to see Sunzu Liao. Is that how you pronounce that? Give me a moment. I have to find out. Okay, having looked it up, it's Sunzu. Well, that's kind of an interesting thing to know, right? Anyway, We got to see Sun Tzu presented to us in a way that would later become or be shown as a simple ruse to fool the other House Scions into a false sense of security about him. There would also be combat exercises, which ended up allowing Victor and Hohiro to gain possession of a direwolf omnimech each. Sun Tzu would actually eject from his direwolf during the exercise in an attempt to just make things harder on the other two future house lords. Something else that happened during the conference was the development of an arms deal between the Federated Commonwealth and the Free Worlds League. In a way, it was something that a Comstar acolyte might call a deal with the devil. The Free Worlds League would sell the Federcom weapons to help them combat the Clan threat. In exchange for New Avalon, the Institute of Science on New Avalon, treating the son of the Captain General of the Free Worlds League for leukemia. Something else which went almost unnoticed by the attendees was the lack of a particular person at the conference, Natasha Kerensky, who had actually returned to Clan space once she learned of the upcoming election of a new Ilkhan. The year of peace was not exactly quiet for the clans, though. They had a lot to work through and a lot to do. The clans needed to elect a new Ilkhan to lead the invasion. Some of the clans were looking to punish Ulrich and his pet spheroid, Phelan, essentially for surviving the attack that killed the Ilkhan. There was also the matter of Natasha returning. She was an old warrior by Inner Sphere standards and an ancient one by the standards of the clans. Some insisted that she undergo a trial of position to prove that she was still worthy to serve in the military, especially since she was just elected as Sakan of Clan Wolf when Ulrich, cleared of any wrongdoing in the death of Leo Showers, was elected Ikon of the clans. Phelan also managed to make his mark enough with the clans that he was allowed to test into the warrior caste. With a new Ilkhan leading them, the clans returned to finish what they had begun. Upon the return of the blood-named warriors, the clans found themselves fighting a rejuvenated, an educated, and a prepared adversary. The Inner Sphere had time to build up its defenses and to get ready for the invasion that they expected from the returning clans. The clans found themselves fighting a harder fight, but not an unwinnable one. Ilkhan Ulrich had called in Clan Novacat to share the Smoke Jaguar Invasion Corridor and Clan Steel Viper to share the Jade Falcon Corridor. The Falcons would no loss on Twycross at the Great Gash, and the Novacats and Smoke Jaguars would suffer a defeat at the combined forces of the Kellhounds and the Draconis Combine Mustard Soldiery. Clan Wolf and Ghost Bear had unique victories in this time, with the Ghost Bears winning a game, winning a world through a contest of sport, football in particular, and Clan Wolf, with Phelan Ward negotiating the surrender of Gunsberg by himself. This event would gain Phelan a great deal of notoriety and eventually lead to him competing for a blood name. Eventually, Comstar learned of the final objective of the clans, though. They wanted to capture Terra and then reestablish the Star League in their own particular way. Realizing the cradle of humanity, a world untouched by war since the establishment of Comstar, was in danger, Comstar made an offer the clans couldn't refuse. They made, as the clans would like to say, a betchall. Comstar would fight the clans. If the clans won, they get Terra. Comstar and everything they know. If Comstar won, though, there would be a truce line at Tukiet that the clans could not cross any closer for 15 years, at least closer to Terra. As far as the clans were concerned, Comstar was doing things the right way, a way they would consider honorable. Boy, were the clans wrong. On the 1st of May, 3052, a brutal battle was held between the invading clans and an army that Comstar had kept secret since the Exodus itself. Called the Comstar Guards and Militia, or Comstar for short, they would engage the clans in some of the most brutal fighting seen for a single world since the liberation of Terra itself. After 21 days, the fighting was finally over, and the clans were saddled with a 15-year-long truce, where they could advance no further towards Terra. Some would think that this would mark the end of the clan invasion era, but they would be wrong. This is more of a small intermission from the main fighting. Time for the backstabbing and intrigue of the Inner Sphere to begin anew. I don't want to focus too heavily on this part, as the Clan Invasion is essentially what this era is about. But we need to take a look at it, though, as it helps develop the backdrop for things to come. You can almost think of this as the end of the early Clan Invasion. Joshua Merrick, who was being treated for leukemia in exchange for weapons, died. His death came at a horrible time for the FedCom, and so Victor, who by now was in charge of the Federated Commonwealth, with both his parents having passed away, enacted a plan his father had put in place in case the situation happened, which was essentially using a body double for Joshua. Unfortunately for Victor, security wasn't as tight as it should have been, and Thomas Merrick found out about the double, and used it as a pretext for an invasion of the Federated Commonwealth. The Capellan Confederation, having lost territory in the Fourth Succession War, took advantage of this and also attacked the Commonwealth, seizing former Capellan worlds as they could. In the other half of the Commonwealth, though, Catherine Steiner Davian, Victor's sister, took advantage of the situation and declared the Laren half of the Commonwealth neutral and created the Laren Alliance, essentially leaving Victor with the Federated Sons in all but name. The chaos of the ensuing attacks completely destabilized the Sarna March, which was the region conquered by the Fed Sons in the Fourth Succession War, and created a Wild West-style region at the core of the Inner Sphere, called the Chaos March. While this was going on in the Inner Sphere, Clan Wolf and Clan Jade Falcon decided to throw down in what would be one of the most epic of throwdowns after the Battle of Tukiit. A couple quick things here. Phelan had gone on to earn the Ward Blood name and ascended to Sakan of Clan Wolf. Meanwhile, Natasha was now the Khan after the death of the Wolf Khan at Tukiit. After the Battle of Tukiit, the Jade Falcons brought charges that the Ilkhan had committed a form of genocide, as the warriors would not be ready to fight after the truce was done. They would be untested. And that he is putting them in a position where they are guaranteed to lose. Ulrich, of course, denied this and declared a trial of refusal. He had gotten permission from the Wolf Khans to bid their entire military in this. Clan Jade Falcon, in turn, bid their entire military. Now, this is rare in a trial like this. Usually, it would be one-on-one combat. Instead, by bidding an entire clan, this had created a situation that would severely weaken the Jade Falcons after the conflict, hopefully making them less of a threat after the Truce of Tukiit had ended. Also, I forgot to put this in my script, Ulrich was trying to purge the Crusader Wolves out of the clan. So, he was willing to do this, even if it cost Clan Wolf itself in the process. Ulrich also took steps, though, to guarantee that the clan would survive, though. I just lost my place. Sending Phelan with a group of Wolf Clan warriors and civilians to the world of Ark Royal, so that regardless of the outcome of the battles in the occupation zones, Clan Wolf would still be around. Ilkhan Ulrich had also created a blood name, a rare event, the blood name of Kel, which was given to Phelan and began that blood house in Clan Wolf. Sorry, I got a little weird there. I ate some wasabi almonds during a quick break. And, that's an interesting flavor and an interesting sensation. Anyway, the rest of Clan Wolf did not fare that well, though. After a war that raged across the Jade Falcon occupation zone, there was little left of both clans. Natasha Kerensky, the famed Black Widow, was killed by a lowly Jade Falcon mech warrior who managed to kill her by roasting her alive in her cockpit with the jump jet of her mech. Ulrich was killed at the end of the war, in an ambush which he thought was honorable combat, and Clan Wolf barely survived, having been absorbed by the Falcons and then reborn as the Jade Wolves, only to rename themselves Clan Wolf once again. So, at this point, we have an Inner Sphere back at war. We have clans who have been shattered on the altar of their own pride. This seems like a fitting end, right? Well, Not quite yet. You see, there's one last thing that happened. There is one event that changed the course of the Inner Sphere and the clans in a way that would have repercussions seen into the Ill-Clan era. Coventry. Coventry is best known for its mech production facilities, Coventry Metalworks, and it's far enough in the Lairn Alliance that it should be safe from anyone for the most part. It normally is. And then Clan Jade Falcon, resurgent a few years after having fought the Refusal War, was looking to get some combat experience for its wet behind the ears troops. It went on a tear through the Lairn Alliance, finally ending up at the world of Coventry. It just so happened that there was a multinational force there conducting training operations, and they ended up encountering the Falcons. In the end, the Falcons ended up withdrawing, and this showed something to the Inner Sphere. They could stop being a bunch of assholes for 5 minutes and work together. This one incident would have consequences that the clans would never see coming. For the first time since the fall of the Star League, all five houses put their differences aside and rebuilt the Star League. The newly formed Star League decided it needed to make sure the clans knew they were serious, and a force to be reckoned with. To ensure this, they determined they would need to annihilate one of the clans, something not done since Clan Wolverine. The two most obvious candidates were the Jade Falcons and the Smoke Jaguars, because they would only have one clan to their flank, and the other would be protected by a great house. After some deliberation, it was decided that Clan Smoke Jaguar was the best target for a few reasons. First, they had not recently suffered in a major war like the Falcons. So as far as the clans were concerned, this would not be going after the weakest of the bunch. This would not be going after somebody who had just suffered and had a large amount of losses. Smoke Jaguars were relatively untouched since Tukia. The other reason is Clan Smoke Jaguar may as well have had a saying that said war crimes and fun times, because they did not believe in retaliation in, They did not believe in retaliation that is in scale with what happens. The biggest example of this is Turtle Bay, where they actually orbitally bombarded a planet, killing off a good amount of its population. So, with all of this taken into consideration, it was decided the annihilation of Clan Smoke Jaguar would be performed in two different operations. The first was Operation Bulldog, an assault on the Jaguar's Inner Sphere holdings. The second was Operation... It's not Scorpion. Scorpion was the... I wrote that down wrong. Serpent, not Scorpion. Yeah, I was looking at my script like, hold up, that's not right. Using recently acquired intelligence from the location... on the location of the clan homeworlds, a task force would be sent on a route similar to the Exodus Road and drop directly onto the Smoke Jaguar world of Huntress. Operation Bulldog was a massive success, rolling up Clan Smoke Jaguar world after world. Part of the reason is that the clans never expected the Inner Sphere to unite against them. The other was an ace up their sleeve, Clan Novacat. Clan Novacat became involved in part due to their ties to mysticism, and them believing that they had been shown visions that they were destined to join a new Star League, one built by the Inner Sphere, not the clans. In doing so, when a Novacat forces would defend a world, they would have a simple trial. Some consisted of one-on-one combat, and others were quite unique. The most interesting that comes to mind is a trial for one of the worlds, which was decided by a coin toss. The Inner Sphere commander flipped the coin. The Novacat commander was to call which side of the coin they would win on. And they called Edge. Once the trial was over, the clan forces would be rolled into the Star League as Star League Novacat force. These fresh forces added to the combat strength of the nascent Star League defense forces, and also threw the Jaguars into chaos as they were depending on the Novacats to help defend their invasion corridor, and instead were faced with them on the field of battle. The Novacat forces involved were able to do so honorably as they had been rightfully taken as Abatka, a clan term for spoils of war. When they would lose their trials, ultimately this would come at a great cost in the end, but we'll talk about that a small bit in the end of this, and one day more in depth, as I feel Clan Novacat is something that, even though I've mentioned, I need to revisit. Between Bulldog and Serpent, Clan Smoke Jaguar was caught off guard. The Serpent forces faced a great deal of difficulty as they were away from any supply lines, and they also were almost overwhelmed by Clan units retreating in the face of Operation Bulldog itself. Finally, on March 30th, 3060, Task Force Bulldog linked up with Serpent on Huntress, effectively removing Clan Smoke Jaguar as a political or military power. The Clan invasion era would finally end on April 12th of 3060, when Victor Steiner-Davian, commander of the SLDF forces, would challenge the clans to a trial of refusal over the invasion. There were 8 engagements overall which would decide the fate of the invasion. Let's take a quick look at all 8. Clan Blood Spirits Bloodguard Keshik would face off against the first Genyosha of the Draconis Combine. The Combine forces won the battle after knocking out Khan Schmidt's mech. So you have a Star League win right there. Clan Fire Mandrill had a force built from many sub-factions in its clan, which fared very poorly against the Capellan Red Lancers, who defeated the Mandrills piecemeal, a little bit at a time, leading to another Star League victory. Clan Hell's Horses Alpha Keshik fought against the Free Roslag Republic's 3rd Drakons, which came back to win after initially being driven back by the horses and winning the battle once again for the Star League. Clan Ice Hellion took on the Star League Novacats. The Novacats were able to fight on after the loss of both of their cons to defeat the Hellions and secure another win for the Star League. Clan Jade Falcon faced Comstar's Invader Galaxy. Having learned their lessons from Tukiid, the Jade Falcons were able to batter the Invader Galaxy and eventually force them to withdraw from the field, giving the clans their first victory. Clan Wolf's Golden Keshik fought against the 1st St. Ives Lancers. These units were evenly matched from the beginning, and neither could gain an advantage. Even with Kai personally forcing Vlad to abandon his mech, and this was the only draw of the entire trial. So out of all 8 battles, one more, I forgot. An ad hoc unit from Clan Smoke Jaguar, what was left of their clan, literally, fought against the 1st Cathal Ulhans of the Federated Commonwealth, in which Victor ended up personally killing the last Khan of Clan Smoke Jaguar and then current Ilkhan, Lincoln Osis, with his katana. As Lincoln's body slid to the ground and Victor stood there victoriously, the clan invasion would come to its end, beginning and ending with the Smoke Jaguar Ilkhan at the head of the clans. The Inner Sphere felt a bit of relief, as they felt assured that the clans wouldn't attempt to pick up the invasion again, at least for the time being. Clan Wolf claimed that the trial didn't apply to them, as they had fought the Star League to a draw, and was advised that any adventurism on their part would be met with swift and severe consequences. I feel that there needs to be a small epilogue to the clan invasion. This separates it from the next era, at least. Victor himself returned to find that he was a man without a home, as his sister had usurped his throne while he was off fighting. Eventually, at the next Starleague conference, he would show up there as the new Precentor Marshal of Comstar, as Focht eventually stepped down. Clan Novacat was abjured. They were forced to retreat to the Inner Sphere in very hasty order. They found themselves living on a reservation in a Draconis Combine, and at odds with the Combine government at times, and also shunned by most of the clans. Trant, the informant on the homeworlds, simply disappeared, and the First Lordship moved from the trustworthy hands of Theodore Kurita to Sun Zi Liao of the Confederation in a political move. Things would not be peaceful for very long at all. So, what kind of mechs will you encounter in this era? Well, a lot. You have the Inner Sphere upgrading their militaries, and in doing so, making a lot of mistakes as they figure out how to integrate new technologies into their units and their doctrines in a very short order. The clans come in with high damage and middle-of-the-road armor and structure units. This would change over the course of the clan invasion, as post-Tukiyid, they found that using units for one-on-one dueling were not the best thing in long-term engagements, as Comstar had shown them so well at Tukiyid. Also in this era, you will see a disparity between Inner Sphere and Clan Force numbers, as the Inner Sphere units tend to have a lower point value or battle value, depending on if you're playing Battletech or Alpha Strike. Also, the Clan units will become even more expensive if using the recommended 3-4 as the average Clan pilot, and 4-5 as the Inner Sphere, which I guess would just be a 3 in Alpha Strike and a 3 for Clans in Alpha Strike and 4 for Inner Sphere and Alpha Strike in this era, as you have to adjust their point value of their units for their skill levels. So if you've listened this far, I thank you very much. And I think that we should definitely move on to the mech tech segment. That was a long one, right? Yeah. But we are now into the mech tech. So MechTech is sponsored by MythKitty Minis. Check out their website at mythkittyminis.bigcartel.com. This episode's MechTech will be exploring the Warhammer 2C. This mech is what happens when the Royal Warhammer gets beefed up and starts taking steroids. Built on an endosteel chassis and protected by 12 tons of ferrofibrous armor, the Warhammer 2C is powered by a massive 320 fusion engine, making it both very durable and as fast as its lighter Inner Sphere cousin. While technically an assault mech, the Warhammer 2C is more like a heavy mech with some extra tons added to it. Its weapons configuration will seem very familiar to that of the Warhammer 7A. The mech carries an ERPPC in each arm, which is backed up by a right torso-mounted SRM-6 launcher and supported by a pair of medium pulse lasers in each side torso, as well as one in its center torso. The mech has light armor for an assault mech, but if you look at it more like a slightly bulked up Warhammer, it has decent armor. The mech is cooled with 20 double heat sinks, which allow it to use its arsenal based more on the ranges it's engaging in, instead of attempting to alpha strike all the time, like some designs and novice mech warriors are wont to do. The mech has a total of 13 variants. For time considerations, though, as well as my sanity after going through everything we just did on the clan invasion, I think we're only going to look at a few of the more interesting ones. The standard variant, which we just talked about, comes in at a battle value of 2,570. The 2C2 replaces all the medium lasers with a pair of LRM-15 launchers supplied by 4 tons of ammunition and case. This is essentially what the love child of an archer and a warhammer would look like, and it's quite scary, as it has the ability to rain indirect fire down on an opponent, as well as shoot them with possible pilot-killing weapons should that opponent stray into their line of sight. The 2C2 has a battle value of 2,482. The 3 is an interesting bird, built in a way to demonstrate the capabilities of the heavy laser system. To do this, it drops the ERPPCs and SRM-6, giving it range for raw firepower, laser-based firepower. It has a pair of heavy large lasers and a half ton of armor. The 2C3 makes these weapons to a targeting computer to compensate for the interference they create when used. It has a battle value of 2,382. The final variant I want to look at is the 2C13. This model uses an extra light engine to save weight, and it fuses the standard and two variants together, creating the ultimate Warhammer Archer hybrid, with the ability to snipe, use indirect fire, and have an insanely accurate close-range punch. This model comes in at 2715. While in standard Battletech, these are all impressive machines, the Warhammer 2C can also be frighteningly effective in Alpha Strike, and does play much like a beefed-up standard Warhammer. Well, most of the time. So the Warhammer 2C standard in Alpha Strike has a point value of... That is not right. That says 5. That is definitely not right. Okay, there we go. It has a point value of 50. Oh my god, that would be scary, wouldn't it? Is tight battle mech, size 4, target move modifier of 1, movement of 8, and it is a brawler. The profile we just went over stays the same through all the variants we're covering today, with the exception of its role. In case I'm wrong, though, I will let you know when we hit that variant. The Warhammer 2C has a short and medium value of 6 with a long of 3 and an overheat of 2. It has 8 armor and 6 structure and has the case special ability. The standard Warhammer 2C comes in at even 50 points. Oh, I didn't need that first part. Cool. Okay, anyway. Warhammer 2C2 has the role of missile boat, but shares the original's base stats. The mech has a very impressive firepower with short medium of 6 and long of 5. The 2C2 has no overheat value and an armor value of 8 with a structure of 6. For special abilities, it has case, indirect fire 2, LRM-222, and costs 52 points. The Warhammer 2C3 is, quite frankly, my most favorite of the variants. Once again, it has the same base stat line as far as movement and everything like that. Still has the role of brawler. It has a very impressive firepower of 7 at short and medium range with no long range value overheat or no long range damage value. It has an overheat of 1. It has armor of 8, structure of 6. The only special ability that it has. Excuse me. Is the ENE ability. This variant comes in at 49 points. This puts its point value at the same level as the C3 variant of the Warhammer. And I think this is a better choice. The Warhammer 2C13, the last one we're looking at today, is an amalgam of the standard and 2 as mentioned earlier. This mech shares the same base stat line as the 2C, even sharing its status as a brawler. This mech has a short and medium of 7 and a long of 5, like the 2C2, but also has an overheat of 3, making it capable of an alpha strike of 10 at short and medium ranges. The mech does sacrifice both armor and structure to pull this off, though, with an armor value of 6 and a structure of just 3, putting it lower than some low-end clan heavy mechs. It has case, indirect fire 2, and LRM-112 special abilities. This glass cannon of a machine comes in at 51 points. While the Warhammer 2C is a highly effective machine, some ideas aren't as awesome as others when it boils down to Alpha Strike. The best two of the lot, in my opinion, are the Standard and the 3. The Standard is a well-rounded, heavy mech masquerading as an assault platform. And the 3 is a beat stick. Plain and simple. As I mentioned earlier, I prefer it because, well, most battles don't have long-range engagement for that long. and you'll spend the majority of your time fighting in the short to medium range bands in a fight. If you need long-range support, that's what LRM carriers and artillery are for anyway. So that pretty much wraps up our show for the day. I do hope you enjoyed it. If you did, and you are listening on Facebook, or not Facebook, what am I thinking? If you're listening on YouTube, like and subscribe, please. That sounded kind of baggy. I'm sorry. But like and subscribe if you do like it. And that way, also hit the little notification thing. That way you can get updates whenever a new episode comes out through this through that platform. If you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/unicorncompany. I have multiple tiers as far as, you know, everything from like $1 to $10 a month. Any little bit does help. And of course, also we are starting to expand the amount of benefits that even just the dollar level patrons get. For example, we are starting to do custom Alpha Strike cards for the mechs that we cover in the Mech Tech series. So, you know, if you're looking for anything from like $1 a month and you get custom cards all the way up to, was it 10 bucks a month and you get like, I think there's one higher than that. You know, but you get miniatures and all that stuff every month, you know, go ahead and check it out. It's a pretty good bargain, I think. You also get a shout out on the show, obviously, which reminds me, I do want to give a shout out to all of my patrons. You make this possible for me to do. You also, it kind of gives me a little bit of a smile to see people who are actually that, you know, that into what's going on here. So I guess that's it for today. I will be doing an update on the Trevor Project raffle on the YouTube channel. So keep an eye out for that. That should be done pretty soon, I hope. So until next time, y'all have a great day, great evening, great whatever it is where you are. This is Carrie, signing off. I'm gonna find my meaning, I can make a change. I wanna play the game. You wanna sink or swim? I'm gonna go.